We invite you to listen and grow to this power business and lifestyle magazine show with hosts Paul and Deb Rees, experts in business, leadership and lifestyle.
Skilling your soft lead to a successful you. Emotions are your value.
And we're up and running, and wow, do I have a show for you today, listeners. I mean, come on. Wow, a week has passed already. Maybe not a week. I mean, I don't know. They go so fast, I can't even recall. Do you know, I was talking to a client yesterday, and I said, January just seemed like 2 months this year. Even though we are well in the swing of Feb, January was just such a long haul, if you know what I mean. But I have an amazing show. We have a guest today. Guess what? Yes. It's been about 6 weeks, I think, maybe 8 weeks, since we've had a guest on, because it's been me and Deb just babbling on and doing our thing. But I know I wanted to start this year off with something special. And by damn, do we have a star in the field, I should say, today. Do you know what? Very modest, though. We had a little quick off-air call before we come on the show. I mean, what a modest person. You know, someone that really doesn't give himself the bragging rights. But we're going to deep dive into this individual. But yeah, just me. Deb is out. Actually, I think Deb has gone back to her old address to pick up some scabby mail and things like that. Do you know what I mean? Redirect is the secret, man. Redirect. You don't have to go running halfway around the country to get your junk mail from your last address. Is where she is. But yeah, you know, we're up here in stick country. Will I stay here, listeners? I don't know. But, you know, I'm here today because I wanted to bring someone into the show, into your mindset that a lot of people know of. But here's the thing. We're going to deep dive into the veins of this beautiful person, because he came into this world with a desire for people to do better for themselves, a drive, and all the beautifulness that comes with that. That's where we are today. I mean, what has my week been? It's been quite a full week this week, do you know what I mean? I've been networking, keynoting, doing all the stuff they would generally do when it comes to running your own business. Running your own life, I should say. Absolutely. So how are you out there, guys and girls? Do you know what I mean? What's going on in your day today? Let us know. And in the meantime, though, do you know what? I'm not going to pull any more airtime with my waffle, although I love talking, otherwise I'd not do this for sure. I'm not going to pull any more airtime. I'm going to introduce this beautiful guest we have here today. I don't know if he minds me calling him beautiful, but I am safe. I am married. Do you know what I mean? All those things. But I'm going to pull him in. So my guest today, man, a leader on all levels. He may say different. Actually, I know he'll say different. A leader on all levels. This man knows how to get the most out of individuals by prompting the best versions of themselves to get the best out of them, for them to want to give the best. And he's done that with 51 caps for England. I'm a Welsh guy, do you know what I mean? I remember when England and Wales played each other. Man, that was a song and dance in the Welsh pubs for sure. Absolutely, by this man. But we're not just going to dive into that. He's a real person behind the green. Do you know what I mean? Absolutely. So let me introduce this beautiful man. We got him here today. Yes, the wonderful Austin Healy. Let me just applaud him in. In you come. Austin, my friend, thank you for coming on the show.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I've never been called a leader before, I wouldn't say, particularly in the rugby sense. But no, it's an interesting start. Let's see where we go.
You know, and let's look at this. And I want to go back, okay, because I'm going to start in the middle where I'll come to the 51 caps. Because let's face it, there was a man before 51 caps and there's a man after 51 caps. But it's a journey, a beginning and a middle and an end. But the end doesn't mean it's the end. It means it's taking you into another transition. But the 51 caps in itself is a profile. The 51 caps in itself is, I'm going to say, an identity that for many remains an identity and for many becomes difficult to divorce and move on from. When we come to that part of your career, that demand that was put on you, not just as an athlete, but the emotional demand that would have been put on you as a leader within your pack of players. Tell me what that, did that feel easy, organic? Were there pressures? Could you do it your own way? Tell me about what that felt like.
Short, I'd say, probably is the best word that describes it. I started, my first game was in February of 1997. And then my last game was in, this is for England, it was in August of 2003. So within that period, I mean, it's not a particularly long period, but there's a lot of emotional ups and downs, a lot of dealing with playing well, dealing with playing badly, dealing with training well, dealing with training badly, dealing with good coaches, dealing with bad coaches, dealing with good teammates, with bad teammates, and probably dealing with a change in culture more than anything else. When I started, most of the players were largely amateur. And when it ended, it was exceptionally professional. And it, you know, the start, there'd be a lot of it. There was a drinking culture in the late mid 90s, even to the late 90s. And then we get to a stage prior to World Cups where nobody drank for months on end. And you were waking up at four in the morning.
At what stage did it go from boot money to professional money? Well, and you know, going from tokens of beer.
Yeah, it went professional in 95, and with the World Cup, they got some money for that. And then 96 was the first year. So the first year of professionalism in the Northern Hemisphere started in September of 96. I signed for Leicester out of university. So I left. It was my final year at uni. I just graduated, and then I started in that September. Now, originally, we looked at buying a house close to about 80 miles away from the training ground. We actually put an offer in on the house to buy that. That was in, say, August of 96. Oh, no, before that, it would have been July of 96. And then the coach arrived and told us that we would be expected in every day at 9 o'clock. So it turned into being an amateur job where you were getting paid relatively well comparatively. To a full-time role where you were in every single morning at 9 o'clock, and probably overtraining, actually, that we trained harder in those early years of professionalism than we did in my last years.
Yeah. And, you know, rugby, at the level you were at, even though, you know, you're quoting your, what, 6 years on that caps, that becomes an identity, a profile that, you know, Austin Healey is known for. That becomes something that, you know, is with you know, you can't deny that that's something that was, you know, or something that was part of you and a big part of you. Otherwise, you'd not be able to do what you did for those 6 years and carry the responsibility that come with that for those 6 years.
No, I don't think you should deny it, nor should you rest on it. I think that it's, I know what you mean. It's like a tag that a lot of people will carry around for the rest of their lives. But I was very determined at the end of my career that it wouldn't really define the rest of my life, because if it did, I was going to have some issues. I would have some problems, more problems than I needed to deal with. So I didn't want it to be an anchor. I wanted it to be, you know, a sort of wind that blew me around.
Wow, I love that. I love that idea. Because let me ask another question. You know, I've had conversations with many professional athletes over the world, and some that have crashed completely after their career because of having to divorce that identity, which you mentioned. You just kind of knew you wanted to sail around but not be part of you. How much discipline did it take for you to, you know, stay firm to that idea, or to just organically, this is what I am? Yes, I did the caps, but that's not going to be what opens doors for me. It's going to be just something I'm remembered for.
I remember there was a guy called Dave Allred, who was the kicking coach for England, and I think still is, actually. And he was also a psychologist who helped the players with a lot of mental preparation and sort of rehearsal stuff. And he said something to me about one of the guys he was coaching had retired because he'd run out of courage. So he'd run out of the courage to get up early or to go through the hard yards or to do stuff. And it just made me think, actually, that there was a point at the end of my career where I ran out of that courage. I probably could have gone for another year. I had a lot of injuries, and it was the injuries that drain the courage out of you more than anything else. But after that, you haven't really got an excuse not to have the courage to go again. And since then, I've had to go again on numerous occasions. I've, been fortunate to go into commentating. Again, people think that's probably my main life, but it's not. And then you've got to have the courage to go into business. Some have been successful, some have failed. And again, you've got to have the courage to restart, even when you get to, your late 40s. I'm probably in a phase now of my life where I'm thinking, right, I'm going to have to start something new here now. So whether you take a balancing tone of trying to discover what that is, how long will that take? How long can I give myself to balance before my brain turns to mush and then decide what's next? Do I start another business? Do I go and do something more sort of giving, in a sense of go back into maybe coaching? Or there's that choice. But once you've made the choice, you've got to have the courage to see it through. And I think I was fortunate to have that conversation. And that was a long time before I retired. But it certainly did stick with me what he said. And you can use a sentence from one person to drive the rest of your life.
So true, so true. And as an athlete, you would have learned to fail it forward very early in life. You learned the understanding of what fail it forward is, because when you go through those injuries, as you say, those difficult prep periods, training periods, you're always failing it forward. And that's a phrase that we use pretty, those who are very successful in life understand the importance and the clarity of what failing it forward is. It means that we never actually fail. We get an opportunity to grow and then move forward, grow and move forward. Where some people fail and keep setting back into that failure, because they wish to repeat the memory of it. And that comes from being loyal to disappointments. That's something that most people practice, but those who thrive in life, they're not loyal to disappointment. They fail it forward from that disappointment, which effectively is what you're saying here. And I love it. I love your approach. But most of all, I want to applaud you for the emotional discipline in not relying on your professional career to be the driver, but in a sense of be the foundation of your emotional strength in creating one. We're going to talk where you are now, but let's go back a little. You talked about university. What was you studying in university?
Mainly girls. No, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with what you just said. I think I disagree. I don't think that the rugby became the foundation for the rest of my life. The foundation comes long before that. I mean, the sport, being successful at sport, is a byproduct of your upbringing, really. And I think that the foundation of that came from my mum and dad, my sister, and the competitiveness that lived in our house on a daily basis in anything that any of us did. And I think that is the foundation of it. And then how that's nurtured through sport, a lot of that is internal, but some of it's external as well. Good teammates, good coaches, good club, being in the right club at the right time. It's a lot easier to be a winner than it is to be a loser. And but it's also a lot harder after you've won, in other ways, but that's another story. So the foundation for me is not based on the rugby, and the rugby is not a defining factor in my life. It is something that I did, and it was something that I did for, well, 7 years for England, and then 11 years for Leicester, and some years before that for Orrell, Waterloo, and Birkenhead Park. And that people who think that's a defining moment are going to really struggle, because there's a lot more to you than just running around chasing an egg.
I love that you say that, and I love the way you put it that way. And thank you for that pushback, because it's so important that we have the authenticity of what created the strength of you. I'm going to rugby because I don't know your past, and
Yeah, no, I
when you
understand.
talk about your home life, we're all a product of our mom and dad in one way or another. That's fact, and scientifically proven. And seeing that, when you talk about the competitiveness in the home environment that created that that shape, we could say, of you, what you've used in rugby, and certainly what you are using to move on with after the rugby. But maybe just do this first quarter here of the show to sort of just beat up and ring the career of rugby as much as I can before we move into other aspects of you, which is, you know, do you see the I don't know, the rugby industry, and I'm going to say an industry, I say, because it is an industry at the end of the day. Do you see that, you know, bettering itself since it's become a professional? You know, I'll be truthful. I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of different people involved in the rugby industry. And, you know, when they talk about the academies and sometimes it's going to be quite spiky, this. And you may say, Paul, you know, I don't really want to go into it, but I'll throw it in there anyway. You know, the condition of I'm going to say the low emotional condition of what are those young players coming through under the pressure to go through the academy and then eventually make their way up into what is the pro ranks, the players, and how some are, you know, struggling even that early age. Do you think that rugby as a professional industry is improving, or do you think that it's become more pressurized and the lifespan is shorter for the career now?
I think I don't say it's shorter, because you've got players like Ben Youngs and you've got Alan Wynn, who have been playing for years, you know, and Alan Wynn in the second row and Ben at nine, different positions, but they've been around for a long, long time. Lots of guys getting into 100 cap territory. So wow. Longevity is definitely there. I think it comes in different layers. One's the performance layer. What does the performance, the skill levels of the players look like? Yes, I think they're arguably better than when I played. Then you talk about the emotional intelligence of the players as a layer, I think arguably weaker, but probably not because of their internal capabilities, but because of the external pressures and the changing environment. And then below that, you look at structurally, how do they develop post the game? And I think there's lots of opportunities there, but it's the same as any industry. It's different for anyone. Yeah. Depends who you are within that team and who you were before you got into that team or before you got into that sport. Not necessarily the sport gives you opportunities. And I'd say the sport now probably gives you less opportunities than we had. You know, there was a lot of old school brigade guys that you'd meet at a rugby match who'd stay friends with you. And, you know, they were always encouraged to form close bonds. And in a lot of ways, you'd probably spend more time away from your teammates with people outside of the sport. Whereas I think nowadays there's almost a bit of a barrier to enable those corporate guys that can be of huge benefit to you after the game to get close to you, you know. So I think from the modern game, that's more difficult and a little bit more fickle. When, you know, the mid-90s, I still know the builder that put his arm around me when I was a 16-year-old lad playing for Birkenhead Park. I still know most of the sponsors that I had through my life at Leicester Tigers. And I think that was a necessity at the time, because that was actually going to be your employment route when you came out of it, unless you were an entrepreneur or you had a skill, whether you went into it as a doctor or a lawyer or something beforehand. So you always needed that ecosystem to help drive on the latter part of your life.
Do you feel that there is more preparation now for the professional athlete leaving the rugby industry as a professional and you know, getting, because I do see, I'm seeing this, you know, the Welsh players creating their businesses and being part of that, helping that, creating businesses and ready for them to, you know, step out their career. So do you see this happening at your end also? Do you see it being, you know, more caring, I should say, for the athlete after their time?
I think the prep, obviously they've had more experience now in time to plan and see what it would look like beyond the gate of rugby. But a lot of the players that I'm seeing now who are starting businesses are basing them on notoriety. So they're basing them on visibility. I call them the Instagram brigade. Everyone seems to be selling their next great idea on Instagram. But ultimately, that just becomes a Ponzi of some kind, because somebody ends up losing out at the end of the road. So I think the preparation is there. The opportunity is definitely there for the players to spend more time educating themselves or re-educating themselves than we had. And when we were playing, when I was playing, it was more a case of, who did you know? What door would that open? But then you've got to start again. When I went into investment banking, I literally had to start again, do all the exams, gain a reputation for my ability to bank rather than my ability to be there as a famous face. So that's the bridge and respectability is one of the hardest things when you go into a new industry, particularly if you go in a few levels up than you probably should have gone in at.
Do you feel that, and this might sound almost like an empty, pointless question, but I'm going to put it in there. Do you feel that
It's always a good
the
start.
threat?
This is a pointless question, but I'm going to ask you it anyway.
Absolutely. I know it's contradicting, isn't it? But that's what makes it so exciting also. It's like, what is he going to ask then? Here's the thing. Do you think that the rugby career actually invested in your life? Or it was just a period of your life that made no difference to your life, now where you are?
No, it definitely invested, and you'd be naive to think otherwise. But also, it depends what level you get to. If you get to just playing a few games for a club, I would just say it's part of your life. If you're there for long periods of time, you win trophies, people remember you for stuff, then A, it inspires other people to do different things. But also it's something that you shouldn't forget, but like I said at the start, you shouldn't let it be the only driving force.
Absolutely. And on that note, listeners, we're going to jump into our first commercial. Quick 90 seconds. We're going to come back and we're diving back into the wonderful Austin Healey. And we're going to move into where he is now and what he's up to and all these beautiful things. So I'll see you guys back in a quick 90 seconds from now. Happy days.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Happy days. We are back in, listeners. And of course, we have the beautiful Austin Healey, 51 caps for England. But that's not why he's here today. He's here today because of everything else that's surrounding that. That was just a small chunk of this man's life, for sure. Very modest again. What can I say? But Austin, let's come into, I want to talk about you're an ambassador for the Sogo Mobility.
Yeah, well, a friend of mine, Carl Hawkins, started this company a couple of years ago. And I just thought, I don't really do ambassador roles anymore. I used to do quite a lot. But I just thought, why has no one done this before? Why are people signing up for long-term leases on cars that they can't afford in cars they can't get out of?
Yeah.
I was coming to the last year of a lease on a relatively expensive car, which everyone told me was amazing. And then I got in and it just hurt my back. And then I thought, well, I can't drive it. I can't change the driving seat. I can't get out of the contract. So I'm stuck with this car for 3 years paying an exorbitant amount of money that I really shouldn't have done. And then Carl started the business, and it does short-term leasing on cars and vans. So basically, you can have a car for a month or 3 months or 6 months or 9 months, and you can just keep swapping it, and it's no more expensive than you'd go anywhere else. So in a time where everyone's going for net zero as well, if you want to go and try an electric vehicle, because most people can't afford them, then it makes perfect sense. So, I've been involved with him for a while now. They're absolutely flying. in terms of, you know, new business. And like I said, I'm amazed no one did it.
So are you, I mean, an ambassador, but are you also, you know, a formal part of the business yourself?
I wouldn't say, well, I'm a formal part of the business, but I, so I just help introduce sort of big corporate firms that I know who want a bit more flexibility. And also most of the rugby lads have gone to him. So all the ambassadorial roles from most of the brands have stopped.
Yeah.
So most of the guys now have said, right, can we buy, you know, can we lease a car? But I don't want to be on something for too long. And I said, well, strangely, Sogo is the perfect partner for you then. So, you know, the likes of Will Greenwoods, Martin Johnson's of this world are all looking at cars from him. And Benny Kay's got one. It just seems like an easy solution where you get loads of flexibility and you can do what you want. So my life is a bit weird now because from September to the end of May, I'm driving up and down the country, Exeter to Newcastle, to commentate on the Gallagher Premiership. And then I don't really work that much in the summer. You know, I might drive to the train station, get the car to London, go for a few meetings, a couple of lunches, that sort of stuff. So I don't need a big 4x4 in the summer. It's a complete waste of it, and it's damaging to the environment. So I tend to just get a little car in the summer that tootles around in, you know, like a Fiat 500 or something like that, convertible, so I can let my hair blow off in the wind. that it has that flexibility. And then if you want something nice for a month, then you just change it up. So, yeah, it's been I think he's onto something very special, and I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of other companies start trying to copy him soon.
I admire you coming on and pushing somebody else's benefit. I think it's fantastic that you do that. Sogo Mobility, and I'm guessing we'll just put in the Google Sogo Mobility, and that will come up.
Yeah, just great. I mean, if you want to learn more, go to sogomobility.co.uk. But they are a company that believe you should be able to speak to someone.
Yeah.
So go on the website, pick up the phone and speak to someone, and they'll. There's a load of people down there in Milton Keynes, right by Carl's house, strangely, where you know you can speak to them, and they're very personable. He's very much like that. He's been in the car game for years, been at Vauxhall, Fiat, you know, Chrysler. This guy's run a load of those companies, and he's a very smart cookie.
You have a lot of good things to say about the company, so that's great, and we're going to give that a shout out a few times through the show. SogoMobility.co.uk, is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah,
absolutely. That's the place to go. Let me come back to, you know, commentator. That's what you do now? That's your living as such?
I get paid for it, yeah. But I have various other sort of companies that provide me with sort of financially more.
Mm-hmm.
You could live off a commentator's salary. It's a great job, but I do it more because I love it. Yeah. And I actually think I'm pretty good at it. Despite what people on social media might say most of the time. But I've realised over the years that you always annoy 50% of the watching public unless they're neutrals. And even then you might annoy a few of those because one side normally wins and one side normally loses. But that builds up over years. So whilst you're annoying 50%, it's like diminishing returns as a commentator. You know, Northampton might win one week and you're nice about them, but they lose the next week and you're not so nice about them. But people seem to remember negativity more, particularly in social media or TV, than they remember positivity. You know, I could say Northampton are the best team I've ever seen and I dream about one day being able to play for them. The next week I'd say Northampton didn't live up to expectations today and they deserve to be where they are in the table. And all of a sudden everybody just remembers the second week and not the first. So as long as you can understand that's what you're delivering, then you can deal with the barrage of hatred that you get through social media. And I don't really care anymore. It used to be a lot, lot worse. It's got better. But it used to be very bad.
Social media is definitely air guns at 10 paces. Do you know what I mean? That's what it is.
It needs to be closed down, Paul. It needs to either be governed properly by the UK government or it needs to be closed down because they are running roughshod over our youth of today and they are changing their lives in a way that they cannot repair. And they need to close it down or at least have a day off. Like Thursday, firewall kicks in. No one's allowed on any. All the social media channels close. They have to close.
Well, you have to get this out there in a petition. Because you're right. Social media creates life envy, business envy, I don't know, looks envy, gift envy, money envy. It creates it all because it's designed to do that. It's designed to create an envy. Yeah, it is. It's designed to create positive and negative conflict. But
imagine if Goebbels had social media. I mean, propaganda was pretty bad in the Second World War, but it hasn't got a patch on what propaganda is today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it is. It's a whole can of worms that I love going into. And yourself and any other thought leader that's out there starts a conversation like yourself with so much passion of we need to have a break from something that's preventing us from using, you know, our ability to tap into our own wisdom, self-worth, confidence, and use that to its full potential. You know, social media is designed to drain that. And it does what it's designed to do. You know, we can't knock it because it's perfect in what it's meant to be. But what it's meant to be, we could say, also is taking away the human being part of us and creating human doings. You know, it's very much doing that. But at the same time, it's perfect for what it's designed to do. As a business, it's a very successful business, but it's not the type of business that creates success. Such a contradiction, but true in itself again. Do you know what I mean? And
well, my additive to that is I couldn't give a monkey's if it's successful or not. I don't care that it makes money. I don't care that all the leaders of each one of these channels has got billions in the bank. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean anything to me. All I care about is my kids.
Yeah.
And it is damaging my kids,
mm-hmm.
but it's damaging the relationship between parent and child because it's almost impossible to get them off it.
So true. I remember my daughter said to me once on the show when I was interviewing my daughter many years ago, said to her, what's your biggest fear? She said, my biggest fear, Dad, is that someone of my era, which was herself, is actually going to be a country leader at some point because we've grown up on phones. We've got our personalities, our sense of humor. As much as I love you, Dad, she said, my personality has come from a phone. My confidence has come from a phone by the amount of kudos that I get. No matter what I hear from you, I'm still governed by this phone, which I have to grow out of. And it was a very profound thing that she said to me and had me in tears at that given point in time. And her
take a phone off of them and chuck it in the bin.
But you know what? When someone's at that age in life, you know, a steady teenager, and I mean also a very mature teenager, Austin, it's not that easy. But I get where you are. And right now, you know, she's a very level-headed person for sure and does very well as a manager, a senior manager in the NHS because she wants to change the system. So she knows what she wants. But you're absolutely right. And your approach to how easy it is to make decisions, cut things off, just say, let's just do this. Lots of people have that beautiful mindset of, yes, it's easy to say, you know what, social media comes down once a week. It's easy to do that, but I'd say behind closed doors, the revenue that the government, and again, all new kind of worms, the revenue that everybody generates from it, yeah, it's not in our lifetime.
Government doesn't generate any revenue from social media. None of them pay taxes in the UK.
Well, you know what? This is
all based in Dublin, and they've got an IP business that's based in the Channel Islands somewhere or is based over in, Lithuania, where you've got zero tax rate, okay. And they just sell the IP back. It's the same with most of the big corporations. Beautiful. So I'm not having that financially they benefit the UK.
So let's end this conversation.
Is this a rabbit hole you didn't think you'd go down?
No, actually, no. It's a rabbit hole that I know very well because of our lot of. But here's the thing, what social media do is designed to generate into the emotional economy of people's lives, not money economy. It's designed to generate into the emotional economy. It's effectively.
Do you think it's working, or do you think it's controlling the emotional economy?
Controlling, it has to, otherwise it cannot make any emotional money from it.
Yeah.
So that's what social media does. It controls the emotional economy, which effectively you could say is life currency. Life currency then is different to money currency. Now, this is a whole different can of worms again, but that is where social media on an emotional mental state runs at its best, sadly.
Do you think it's basically fascism then, gone mad?
You know, that there, I don't completely understand. The word fascism, I don't completely understand. So it'd be difficult for me to dive into a conversation with that.
Controlling the thought process of the multi.
Well,
so controlling as many people's thoughts as they possibly can. It would, deriving them of any imagination. That's what I would say social media is.
Absolutely. Otherwise, it can't control the emotional economy that is actually invested in. So
yeah, I think you've worked out I'm not overly keen on social media. Well, you might want to move on.
I think what I've worked out is that you are dedicated to the future of how people think. That's what I've worked out to you, is that means a lot to you, not just the children, but the future of our young minds are going to generate the success of not just our country, but after we leave. That's what I feel you are dedicated to.
And so I'm actually more dedicated to truth. I think the control of the future of the minds has already been started. And if we don't stop it, then we'll never get back to the truth.
I love this. I love that this man here, who has 51 caps for England, has thrown this into the mix of conversation. I love that people are going to understand this part of you that wasn't on the field, that wasn't, you know, that probably a lot of people wouldn't recognize, is that how much you care, how much you care about what happens to not just, again, the future of your children, but the future of everything that happens, you know, in our country. And that, to me, is more important than any rugby conversation, although it's a big part of what we have touched on. But also, you know, you're in a position now, I'm guessing, because you said, you know, Paul, the commenting, yeah, it does bring in a revenue for me, and you have other streams of revenues that comes in that rewards you for, you know, all your efforts in life, and also rewards you for the effort you put into your rugby career. Because remember, that wasn't just about you with the ball and the other players. It was about the experience everybody surrounding you, the fans were getting from what you were putting in also. The feel-good factor they were getting from that, as well as you and the players. And all this has to come back, you know, in a sense of rewarding you, bringing back into your life. Do you feel that, you know, where you're going in a sense of where you want to be, do you feel that, you know, let me ask it another way. Bear with me with this, listeners, because it's quite a technical thing for me. Where do you want to be with your influence? You know, where do you want to take the influence of Austin Healey? Because we cannot deny, of course, your 51 caps. You know, your voice is out there on the airwaves. You're used to that. So where do you want to take the influence of how you create the change or add into, you know, the crowds of think leaders like yourself that are wanting to create the change for a better mindset? Where do you want to take that? How do you want to influence that over the next 20 years?
I don't know, really. I'm having a year off, really, this year for myself. So I had a knee replacement in October. Mm-hmm. I'm going to try and get really fit before I'm 50. And then I'm having a year, like I said, right at the start, to just rebalance in terms of focus and decide what to do next, whether that's, like I said, whether it's business, whether it's some kind of education stuff, teaching kids, or like you said, maybe even on the really far side, going into politics. I don't know. It could be any of those things. But I'm going to just take a year with no direction, really, and then start again. So I'm trying to stay young. So I'm testing loads of different health things that you see on social media, finding out. Actually, one arrived this morning. I tried it for the first time. It was horrible. And yeah, trying different things to see if I can de-age. Yeah. So, you know, I want to try and turn 50, but have the body of albeit a metal knee, the body of a 40-year-old. Mm-hmm. And I think that's very, very possible. So I'm having a year to myself. I've given a lot to other people, both, you know, financially and time-wise, for a long period of time. So it's back to me now. Sod everyone else. I'm even joining a golf club. That's how selfish I'm being. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's just a
different I really am an old fart now. So I am actually joining a golf club, yeah.
well, you know, Austin, I'm 54. And, you know, for me, age is just a perception. I grew up where age wasn't important. You know, it's not something we actually talked about in our family, although we celebrated birthdays. And I believe that your thought on age is just a perception. Also, we're designed to last as long as we want. And that design is influenced by our honesty, by our authenticity, and by the integrity that we give out to others. And that's what age does.
Well, you might want to get one of these things. So that's an oxygen chamber, hyperbaric.
Wow.
Which we tend to go in quite a bit, mainly to get away from the kids. Yeah, so just looking at different ways health-wise to influence, you know, keep your testosterone levels as high as you can as a man.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you read up now, our dads had 50% more testosterone than we have. And it's to do with the amount of estrogen in the system from plastics and waters and stuff.
Yeah.
So my wife's probably one of the most best read people on health, I would say, in the UK, mainly looking after her own health.
Yeah.
From a blood profiling point of view to a DNA. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we are very much interested in where is the, you know, where's food going? What can you eat that benefits you and what suits you and how can you get longevity? But not just that. Like I went skiing 3 months after my knee replacement, mm-hmm. which my mm-hmm. wife told me not to do. But I sort of figured I had it done so I can do things. I didn't have it done so I can't do things.
Yeah.
It's been incredibly sore since I've got home. It's recovering now. But I think you've got to live your life and find ways to live it to the best of its ability.
I mean, that is an amazing mindset. And on that note, we're going to dive into our last commercial, your listeners. We're going to come back with the lovely Austin Healey and dive a little more into this man's care and share for you know, the future of where we are and also for himself. So let's quick commercial, and we'll be back in about 90 seconds, guys. So happy days. See you in a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory, E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Boom, and we are back in, and of course, we are with the lovely Austin Healey, 51 caps for England, and now, of course, the ambassador for Sogo Mobility. Sogo, am I saying that right?
Yeah, sounds just about right, yeah.
It's sogomobility.co.uk. Get on there, because if this man loves it, everybody should love it, because this man loves everything. And, you know, we have certainly dived into many different aspects of, you know, your thought, your concerns, your career, you know, where you're going, taking that 12-month off now to realign and reset, which is fantastic that you're getting to do that. And, of course, what you're doing personally in order to, you know, maintain what is peak health for yourself, your family, and all those beautiful things. You know, I mean, not everybody, of course, has the reach that you have in the sense of being able to, you know, introduce into their lives, you know, almost a conscious decision and a conscious process to say, well, I want to, how do I look after me? Some do it very late in life, some don't do it at all. But I think moving forward, you know, the younger generation are becoming more health conscious. You know, veganism is becoming fashionable, or is fashionable now. You know, vegetarianism, pescatarian, all these things. It doesn't matter what you are, but there are so many different fashions where people are, you know, becoming more instilled in the direction to how they look after themselves. Alcohol, at some given point, is becoming less fashionable than what it was. I mean, listen, in the days of early rugby, you could say you had to be a boozer or you weren't a rugby player.
Yeah, but I think if you'd have watched the news or read papers or research papers over the last 25 years, every part of the food chain is bad for you or good for you. There's been no continuity in that. It's whoever's funded research going into any varying time. But yeah, look, I got fortunate that I've worked hard and we're in a position where I can try new things like supplements. And, you know, there's a lot of people trying things that are even left field, like going and having growth hormone and seeing how that affects them in small doses. A lot of people are microdosing on various things to see how it benefits their brain power. You said about the youth. I think the youth are of the UK are in a lot of trouble because they're eating so much processed food that we're going to see really bad outcomes from that in 10, 15, maybe even shorter, 20 years. Me and my wife were discussing about whether we think life expectancy for our children's generation is actually going to drop. Mm-hmm. Whether are they going to be the first generation that sees a dramatic drop in life expectancy? So, you know, I think we have to make conscious decisions to try and do things and get out more. Mm-hmm. It's a constant thing, isn't it? I like a bit of gaming myself. I used to, but you can't sit in on there for 4 or 5 hours. We've got a festival called Festival of Sport.
Okay.
So myself and Will Greenwood started it a number of years ago. And it basically brings families over a weekend to try every single sport. And you don't need to be good at it. You might find a sport like archery. Like hardly any kids in inner cities have done archery, or hardly any kids have done judo. You know, two of the most popular things in sports that in the festival that you see kids just migrating towards, trampolining, they all love gymnastics, they seem to love. And yeah, we had last year, we had a lot of donations for foster families. So we had a lot of foster families there. We had a lot of Ukrainian families there. We hold it at Holcombe Hall again this year, which is in Norfolk. Mm-hmm. And it's just good to see families going out and doing lots. You know, they camp or they glamp or, you know, they come in for the day, but they go out and they try loads of different sports. And you physically see the change in a child's face from an enjoyment level and a confidence level in a lot of them. There'd be a lot of kids that would stand on the side of a sport and say, I've never done this, and there'd be a barrier to entry. Mm-hmm. But once they start, they completely change. And then I think if you do something that you don't believe you can do and you enjoy it, it will enable you to do something else in the same way. And that might be in the working world. It might be in an interview, in going for a job. It might be anywhere. But if you can increase a kid's confidence through sport, then we've certainly achieved something. And we saw that, you know, in thousands of children last year. It was amazing.
Well, here's the thing, Austin. Don't take a 12-month off. Tomorrow, put your package together so you can go and keynote into schools, colleges, universities, and be of a profound importance to Welsh government, English, whatever it may be. So you can, all that we've shared here today is starving into needing to be heard. All that you've spoke about today really needs to be set out into some form of delivery. And really, and the importance of that message is huge right now. You know, we are not going to change until we have concern. That is the nature of our leaders run countries. Until there's a concern and the strategies are put together where there's a shrink to create that concern, then, you know what? Food will not change. We don't have allotments anymore like we used to years ago. You know, we don't dig our garden up and plant potatoes and vegetables like we did years ago. We become lazy hunters for sure. And
people have tried in the past. So, you know, with food in particular, I thought Jamie Oliver did he made a great attempt to affect change. And was any change made? Maybe for 10 minutes, maybe for 20. It didn't really make a huge difference. So what I need, like you said, I would love to go and do that, but I would only do it. And this is why I didn't coach. I didn't coach because there's no direct correlation between your own performance and the outcome in my mind. But maybe that's wrong, because I was thinking back to the players that I played with, the Lewis Moody's of this world. You could coach him all week wonderfully and he could be really well prepared. And then Friday night he goes out and gets hammered. And then he plays like a complete drain on the Saturday, or he doesn't do that. And the Saturday, he gets a rush of blood to the head and headbutts somebody, or he, you know, he does something, or he knocks the ball on over the try line when you haven't coached him to do that. So I don't like the fact that I can't correlate my workload to the outcome. And if I can correlate that, then I'll do it. So what you're talking about is trying to make it a change. In kids, it's a lot easier, I think. But you need some kind of, you need a route, a channel for them to do that. And it's not the words of adults, it's the deeds of their own that do it.
I see that, absolutely. But also, we need the words of those emotional leaders to create nudges in emotional change, to create emotional habits, change in emotional habits. You know how to do that because you've done it.
All leaders don't do that, though. All leaders aren't interested in that. All leaders are interested in a four-year cycle of getting re-voted in.
That's why we need people like yourself, because when you've got this done on a broadband network where there are lots of people voicing out the importance of emotional habitual change, then it all adds up. Yes, it's a chip away process, but even if we're not chipping away, that means it's zero. Chipping away means that we are looking to change the generation of the second or third generation to come in, not the one now. And that's where, Austin, you
and me. I think we could get a lot deeper here, Paul, about the end of capitalism and all that. But I think you haven't got long enough in your show to manage that, really. But, I agree with that. A lot of things that you're saying. It's just sometimes you can only push water so far up a hill before you have to fill your own swimming pool with it.
Very much. You know, this has been such a fantastic conversation. And what I love about this opportunity to deep dive with you, Austin, is that we passed the rugby expectation, have gone into the heart and soul of what it is important to you, and how you feel about change and all those beautiful parts of your emotional intelligence. So thank you for being open. Thank you for sharing that. Listeners, it's been absolutely beautiful. Let's give a big shout out for, of course, this ambassador for SogoMobility.co.uk. That's out there. Look for it. You'll find it on Google, of course. But also, more importantly, this 51-cat man who has an advanced level of intelligence that should be used to be part of creating habitual change in our country. It's beautiful. We will see him after his year off, I'm sure, plowing back into, I don't know, maybe it's politics, maybe it's much more. Austin, thank you so much.
Well, thanks very much. Our local MP couldn't even save our local free gym, so she needs to go.
Oh, bless you. Getting that in and on the end. That's fantastic. So, listeners, we're going to leave it there. Of course, I will catch you this time next week, wherever you may be. And until that time, we're going to say bye for now and boom! Emotions.